When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Yesterday's Concert is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast Network.
I am so proud of Lady for Sale still, which is such an amazing feeling. You know, as I'm an actress as well, and I feel like I've done only a handful of things in my career that I'm just like, I love that. And I stand by it and think it's so cool. And Lady for Sale, to me, is that it's, you know, it didn't do what I exactly wanted it to do or thought it could do, because I believe in it so much in terms of like a astronomical success. But I do feel that it was a successful representation of my vision and my feelings and this incredible kind of intense moment in my life, which is what so much of that is about. I mean, the record is about basically exploding your life to go and be with someone or do something that's risky.
Welcome to Yesterday's Concert, a podcast that celebrates live music. My name is Lance Ingram, and in this episode we talk to singer-songwriter Lola Kirk. We discuss the one-year anniversary of her country 80s pop album, Lady for Sale. Grab your earplugs, despite what Lola says. So, I'm here with Lola Kirk. We're going to talk about the one-year anniversary of Lady for Sale today. But before we do, Lola, how are you today?
I am doing good. I am tired but happy.
Well, you have been on the road with one of Yesterday's Concert's favorite artists, Miss Margot Price. How has that been?
Oh my God, I love her so much. Yeah, I just saw she announced some new dates, and I was just like, maybe I should just like follow her in like a further bus or something.
I got to see her when she was still playing teeny tiny bars, and it was one of the most like transformative shows I've ever seen. Like I was on the back of like six or seven shows, and it was hands down the best one. And it's still such a vivid memory of seeing her in that. And like, I even snuck backstage after the show to meet her and say hello and everything. Like it was such and she was incredibly nice. And like Colter Wall was hanging out backstage too. He'd opened and I got to hang out with him. It was a really great night. And so ever since then, I love her music, but I thought so fondly of her ever since that night. It was just, she is so talented.
She is. It's a great combination of, we like, sometimes there's this unfortunate thing that happens where it's good guys, bad band. GGBB is we call it in the biz, but she's GGGB. Took me a while to figure that one out, but her band is also just like so incredible and such lovely dudes.
Well, so I mentioned before we started recording that we're going to do a couple icebreakers. So this is a good segue into the very first icebreaker. She's such a prolific songwriter. Is there a song from her discography that you would love to steal and claim it as your own?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, I feel like Desperate and Depressed is pretty great. Mm. I love her duet with Willie Nelson too, off of All American Made. It's a pretty amazing thing to get to do a duet with Willie Nelson is a dream. So,
well, we'll put that on your bucket list then.
It have to happen. Yeah, definitely.
We'll will it into existence.
Yes. Into existence. Okay, that was a terrible pun. I've been writing all day, so my brain is, I feel like I need to get to like a boundary with myself about like how many hours I can spend writing anything, because it's certainly, I think it, you know, work smarter, not harder. And I work hard, but not that smart.
Well, if you're coming up with puns like that, though, I think you should throw yourself fully into it just because that was amazing. Like, that
Oh
brightened
my
my
God,
day so much.
thank you. Okay, all right. Well, thank
Throw
you.
yourself into your work. It works. So, okay. So, question number two, what's your favorite venue in Nashville for live music?
Oh, I mean, I love the Nashville Palace. It feels weird to not say the Ryman right there, but like, because I love the Ryman too, obviously, that's amazing. But the Nashville Palace is my top spot.
I don't even think I've heard of that place.
It's like typically just like a lot of bar, like house bands and stuff. Like, it's not like a lot of artists that like tour definitely don't play there. I'm trying to do a show there at some point, so maybe you can come to
I
that.
will
But
come to that.
it's just, it's an amazing bar in Donaldson, like right by the airport. And one of
Okay.
my dreams, which definitely feels attainable, I just would need to like do it, is to like get off the airplane and go straight to the bar.
You should definitely do that.
I mean, that's so easy. It's like 5 minutes away, so it's a great place. If anyone's just landing in Nashville, go to the Nashville Palace. Have fun.
So, next question, scale of 1 to 10. How amazing is Careless Whisper by George Michaels?
I mean, so good. I have like a big, sorry, I'm currently using, for those of you who can't see me, one of those head dangler things. It's fucking amazing. It's like a whisk that someone cut the bottom off of. It's amazing. It's amazing. I love George Michael. I mean, I got really into Freedom, if you want it. What's it? That like amazing album over Thanksgiving. I was listening to it a lot. So good.
Have you heard of Sexy Sax Man Sergio Flores on YouTube?
No,
Okay,
no.
I'll send you the link afterwards. It's this guy, he puts on like a mullet, he's shirtless, he wears suspenders and these super tight black leather pants, and he just like burst into like Walmart and stuff playing like the Careless Whisper saxophone part, and then he just like runs out. Like there he like runs into like a classroom at one point and does it, and it's just amazing.
What? I mean, that would be like if that happened to me right now, Sergio the sax man just burst in with the sax part of that.
Yes.
I think I would never be sad again.
Well, how could you? I mean, it's Sir Sexy Sax Man. I mean,
If you knew that that was like a possibility in your life, that like someone would run in and just spark joy in such a carelessly wonderful way, you
you're
know?
doing it again. You're doing it
I'm doing it
again.
again. I'm doing it again.
I
Doesn't even
love
make
it.
sense.
Well, I'm gonna get you a Careless Whisper saxogram order to your house. Or
Thank you.
to the Nashville Palace while you're performing. That's what I'm gonna do.
Oh, that would be just too much. Thank you. Thank you, Lynn.
You're welcome. Okay, so next question. So this is off of you did an AMA on Instagram earlier this week.
Yeah, I did.
And there's a question that I want to bring back. It was such a terrible question. Which do you enjoy more, eating or music?
I mean, eating, obviously. I mean, you know, both I need to do to survive. And I guess both have their downsides. Like, I can eat too much, you
Yeah.
know? I often do. I before it was like gauche to like Louis CK. And I don't condone his behavior. He did have this one amazing like bit, which was like, I don't eat till I'm full, I eat till I hate myself. And I just feel like that was like, yes, I felt very seen by that. So yeah, eating.
Well, so I was having a philosophical conversation today with someone about it's the things that we love the most that are actually killing us. Because I was like, I go to hundreds of live music shows a year, and like it's slowly eroding my ability to hear, which is taking away the very thing that I love the most. But it's the same thing with food. Like, I love fried chicken, therefore I eat more fried chicken, but I'm dying because I'm eating fried chicken.
Like, I wouldn't be like, oh, I want to eat healthy food. Like, when I talk about
Yes.
loving eating, it's not healthy things.
Oh, absolutely not.
Also, like, I feel like I get the warning from my phone that like I'm listening to music too loud, like every time. I need to start being one of those people that doesn't do that, but I don't understand the point of listening to music not loud.
Oh, I get that. Do you wear earplugs when you perform or
No,
when you go? You
no,
don't?
no, I really don't. And so my dad was in my dad's a drummer. He was in Free and Bad Company, a hard drummer, hard rock.
Yes.
Not to be confused with the Hard Rock Cafe, but anyway, he like cannot hear, like literally.
Yeah.
Like, so growing up, he used to drive me around a lot, and I would be able to listen to music like so loud in the car just because it wouldn't really, you know, get through to him. And I feel like I should take a cue from him. And he has started wearing little hearing aids. And it's so cute. Like now I'm going to start crying about like my parents' mortality. But now
he's got to live forever. He's free.
He's got to live forever. Rock and roll will never die.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, I should wear hearing aids or hearing things. Earplugs.
Well, I mean, my wife is an audiologist. So it's like, if I don't wear them, I get scolded. And I mean, rightfully so. I should wear them.
No, we should all wear them. But it's just a bummer.
It is. It's good to just feel it deep in your skull when you're laying in bed later that night. It's just the way to do it.
Absolutely. Also, I just feel like nothing like, it's like going to meet up with a friend thinking that you're going to have like a great night. And they're like, oh, I'm not drinking. Like when I see like little blue ear plugs poking out of like a friend's ears, I'm like, what are we doing here?
Well, I will not wear my earplugs when I come
Don't
to see you in concert.
Wear earplugs around me. No. Wear earplugs, protect your ears, take time off, eat healthy foods, you know, all the things.
Okay, so last icebreaker, and then we'll get into the actual conversation.
I feel the ice is broken, but yeah, go ahead.
I mean, I agree, but let's go deeper in this relationship. I want to be best friends now.
Okay, good.
So
great.
I read that the band is one of your favorite bands.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite album by them? Which one do you love the most?
What if I'm like cahoots? I love the self-titled one, and I love Stage Fright. And then, I mean, yeah, Music from the Big Pink is obviously great too. Anyway, I love those like three, but yeah. I really, really do love Stage Fright probably the most. What about you?
I mean, I know it's cliche, but Big Pink, I think
yeah.
so.
Yeah,
like it's just so many. I mean, I grew up on classic rock radio, and just like to hear those songs like in repetition and everything. It's just, it like fulfills something deep within me.
Yeah, it's great.
Because I mean, like my dad saw Peter Frampton in 1978, and like I constantly ask him to like retell the story to me of like seeing him and like him talking about like women throwing their underwear on stage at him and everything. Like, and I'm like, Dad, just tell me the story over and over. And that's what it's like listening to Big Pink. It's like hearing that my dad tell me that story over and over.
Glory days.
Yes.
Glory days. I mean, it really, nothing is, I hate to say this because it feels like it's a bleak future, but there's like really nothing better than like 60s and 70s classic rock.
It's tough to beat it.
Like everything, and I love other kinds of music. Like, I just don't know that it can be done again.
Well, it was so revolutionary for, and especially for the time. Like, I mean, because that's even like, I mean, like Margot Price, I love her, and I think she's brilliant.
Oh, she's
in
amazing.
Every way.
She's working in the tradition.
But she's pulling so much of that lineage as well in what she does. So, I mean, it's just maybe people will be pulling stuff from Lady for Sale in 20 years.
I know, but I was pulling things. I mean, this is a perfect segue. Like, I feel like at this point, for my TED Talk, you thought this was an interview and I'm coming in here hot.
No, bring it.
No. So, I feel like at this point, being a musician is to work within like a legacy and a framework and a tradition, and to not be like aware of your musical ancestors and not like pay homage to them is like very odd and like stupid to me. It's stupid insofar as like you have like the world at your fingertips with your phone right now. Like you should be exposed. Like it's not there. It's no longer a matter of like, oh, like you know, you don't have like, you didn't go to a school that necessarily educated you about these things, or you're not from this part of the world. Like if you can like go on TikTok and like watch a married couple in Wisconsin, like, I don't know, bicker and be funny because that's what they do for their weird TikTok brand. This, I know that sounds specific, but there's like so many couples on TikTok. Then you can like go and like listen to obscure David Bowie records and like educate yourself.
As you should.
Yeah. So,
but I mean, that was one of the things about Lady for Sale that struck me was it felt really comfortable because it felt like something I'd heard before. But at the same time, it felt very new and fresh because it was something different. Because I mean, you blend like 80s pop and country really well on this album.
Oh, thank you so much. It was so fun to do that too. And like, I wonder, I'm like, how am I going to follow this up? I mean, I love genre, and I think that genre is so exciting. And like, I don't know if I can make another record that like blends those two things together. Maybe I could, but I feel like I might just like go deeper into the genre of country music and discover something there. But yeah, I it was so fun to explore all that kind of music, and it was interesting, like, to see the response. Like, a lot of people really didn't get it. I remember reading reviews because I'm a masochist, and some of the reviews were just like no one asked for this. Like, this album would be great if there wasn't a synth on it. And I was like, that was the whole point. That was
Yeah.
the whole fucking point. Excuse my language.
I don't care.
Okay, great. We're cool. We're grown up. We curse. NBD. Okay. Yeah. It's late. It's 4 o'clock, guys. It's 4 p.m. or
We're
three.
running the midnight oil. We're
Yeah,
burning it now.
we're
So, I mean, like, and I'm sure you've been asked this before, but like, what was the inspiration behind blending those two genres together? I mean, like, was that a conscious decision, or was it just something that,
Oh,
like,
absolutely. So I co-wrote most of the songs, all the songs, with the producer of that record, Austin Jenkins, who is incredible. He wrote and produced the first Leon Bridges record and was in White Denim for a long time, and had a great studio in Fort Worth. And we had made a duets record together that was much more kind of old school country inspired. He was very much like, hey, like, your music like isn't as fun as you are. Like, why is that? And I was just like, oh, you're like right. Like, I'm really fun, and like, if I am nothing if not fun. Like, that's really all I have going for
You know, I
me. And
haven't
then
picked
like,
up on that in our conversation today so far. This is really a shocker right
thank
now.
you. I know, it's crazy. No, I mean, he was just like, why do you wanna, like, what are you trying to do? Like, this is like, lean into what you have. And then, like, I started listening to a lot of Judds at that time and was just like so inspired by them. And then I don't know, I just like, I through that, like, the Judds and that comment about being fun, and then like getting into other like 80s country of that time. And just hearing like nobody was like referencing that yet. And it just felt like a really fresh angle to approach things from. And like brave and scary and a risk. And it certainly did like impact, I think, the listenership of the record, because it doesn't fit into genre necessarily. So, and that's like the impossible part of today, is like, if you don't fit into genre or zeitgeist, it's really, really hard to kind of break through. Which is fine. It was kind of like a letdown, but it is funny. Like, I remember when I mean, my experience of playing it live has been like incredible response. I feel like when people actually like get to hear it, they can enjoy it. But I think that it's hard to do something new and different when that's not really like rewarded. Even when that new and different thing is like referencing something old, which nobody has done yet.
I'll be frank, like I have a this thing I call it the Big Head Todd syndrome, because when I was in high school there was a Big Head Todd and the Monsters live album called Live Monsters, and I listened to it so much and I loved it, but it was everything that I needed from Big Head Todd and the Monsters. Like, I didn't need to go hear any of the rest of his discography because I got everything that I needed from that band on that one album.
Oh, interesting.
There's been a few other artists that have kind of fit into that category, but that album specifically. And when I listened to Hearthead West for the first time, I kind of it felt that. I was like, oh, I'm getting everything I need from her in this album. It perfectly,
Oh.
like, it really was filling me up, and I like was listening to it so much. And then, like, you had, Letty for Sale there, and it was maybe I should check this out, kind of forced. I mean, even like the Raconteurs, now that I think about it, their first album was like that for a long, long time for me. I pushed myself to listen to Lady for Sale, and like you were saying, I did pick up on the fun, and it kind of expanded that for me to where it was like, there is more here than I think. And Lady for Sale has far surpassed my opinion of Hearthead West.
Oh, thank you. I'm happy to hear that.
It was kind of discouraging when I was prepping for our conversation to read, like, you kind of have negative emotions toward Hearthead West now. Is that.
Well, I just don't know that it's not negative emotions to the record. I love that record, and I just don't know that it represents me, and I don't know that I would make that record again. Like, I feel like I would make Lady for Sale again. Like, if I could, like, I would do it. But I feel like I didn't know who I was really when I was making Hearthead West musically, or who I wanted to be musically. Like, I think I was still very wanting to fit into something rather than to stand out. And not that, like, I mean, wanting to stand out, like not believing in myself that I mm-hmm. could stand out. Like I just wanted to like do the best possible version of something that was already happening. And I don't know that that sureness of self has lasted or pervaded who I am musically now. I think it was just mm-hmm. like a moment and I'm trying to find it again. So I feel like I really knew who I was and got to put my best foot forward with Lady for Sale in a way that I wasn't sure how to do with Hardhead West yet.
Well, was it a cathartic experience to kind of rectify that situation when you wrote Lady for Sale then?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I also just like didn't, I don't know. It was something I wrote over a really long time. And a lot of the songs I ended up rewriting with Austin, they started like, I mean, Stay Drunk was like a really sad ballad. And then like, we just like tried to put it into a different kind of zone. And that meant like rewriting a lot of melodies and changing the tempo, obviously. And yeah, I think that it was really fulfilling to see how close we get to a reference in a lot of ways. And those references like weren't just the Judds. There was like a lot of really weird references on there. I mean, like a song like Nobody by Sylvia was a big one for us. There was a lot of like Janie Fricky, like really weird, obscure country that like people think it is just like cheesy unless they're like 85 years old and their name is Rose and they live in mm-hmm. the suburbs.
Yeah.
And I want to hang out with them.
One of the things that I picked up on when I was, because, you know, I mentioned that it was comfortable, but it felt new. The thing that I was catching was like, it was kind of the heavy synth sounds that were kind of the familiar part about it. But a lot of the vocal melody, because I couldn't figure out, I was like, it sounds so 80s, but what's the country aspect that I'm hearing aside from just like the slide guitar?
Oh, interesting.
And yeah. I picked up that it's the vocal melodies that were the distinctly country part about it. Is that, am I onto something or is that like?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, that was the other thing. Like, there's like literally one of the things that Austin made me do. And there was, he was like, say it like Jim Carrey in Ace Ventura, like, like, I don't know, not that that's country at all, but he was just like, have as much fun with vocal melodies as you can. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, I don't really play music in like a, I don't really play music. So it's not like I know where to go and what notes to sing that would fit inside like a certain scale or blah, blah, blah. So there were a lot of mistakes made. Mistakes were made, but eventually I feel like we got something really fun. And my references, you know, something that I love about Margot so much was I was like, oh, like we have like similar, I can tell we have similar vocal idols. Mm. Like there's a similar aesthetic and taste that like, because I think all artists, whether they know it or not, are referencing things, mm-hmm. are working within a framework. And it's really exciting to me to meet other singers who are like, oh yeah, like I love that kind of classic country mm-hmm. style. And like, I'm going to sing like that instead of like, I don't know what's popular now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, I mean, like you saying that about Margot and like the similarities in the vocal melody. One of the songs that I picked up on that was Pink Sky. Mm. Like that would, I really, especially in the chorus, like I could hear Margot doing that as well. But I mean, you do it really great. And I don't want to like dismiss that at all. But like, I adore the chorus, like the vocal melody in the chorus of that song. Can you tell me the story of that song? Like, I just, that's my favorite song on the album.
Like how it was written or what it's about.
Oh, both.
Okay. So, it's about like waiting for someone to come home and then like, okay. So I guess that song, first of all, that song didn't have a chorus originally. Hmm. The chorus when I wrote it was the No Rush pre-chorus. Hmm. And then when I played it for Austin, he was like, that's not a chorus. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I'm like, shut up. Like, no. And then like a few hours were spent playing with like a different, with that melody and playing with some like really dumb lyrics that I like he would be like, what about like Red Wolf Running Away? Yeah. That like, that was his like version of that. And then Pink Sky eventually came. And I'm so happy that he pushed me. There was a lot of that involved. But the song is about just like waiting for someone who says that they're coming to come home and they don't. And the No Rush part, like for me, I feel like regardless of whether or not I'm waiting, I'm a person that rushes as if there is some end in sight or some judgment coming, and just telling myself like there's no rush. Like he's not coming back soon. And like you're or whatever, it's not going to happen that soon. So just like relax. Like, I don't know, the mantra of just like telling yourself to relax and be safe because, nothing crazy is going to happen.
Well, I read in another interview with you that you were talking about like the great thing as an actor, the great thing about country music is the ability to like musical costume, essentially, where you can jump into like somebody, and country affords you that pretty much better than any other genre is going to allow you to. So is a lot of this album more jumping into musical costume, or is it a lot of autobiographical, or how did you kind of approach that?
Oh, it's both. I mean, I as an actor, I firmly believe, and as a person who is an actress, I believe that, you can live more truthfully through the mask. You can exist kind of more, you can be more expansive in a costume. I mean, and especially for me, country music is a costume. Like I am a like New York Jewess, basically. Like I am not I am like so not, from a world that was like country adjacent at all. We didn't really, I listened to classic country music growing up and I loved it. But I wasn't listening to contemporary country radio, except for the songs that really like broke through, which were like Shania and Faith Hill and some Garth Brooks and all of that. But not the kind of more classic stuff that a lot of my friends who are living in Nashville like did grow up on. But I still love country music so much because I do think that the themes and the stories are something that are universal. And I love the strength of women in country. I love the vulnerability of men in country. And I really do often think of this Tammy Wynette quote, which I can't remember exactly, but it's like basically something to the effect that like rock and roll is too soft. Like next to country, like that's like the hardest thing that there is because you can exist so fully and so simply. And increasingly as a writer, I appreciate country because the great country songs do simplify and distill some of the most complicated feelings and use humor a lot of the time. So all of those things really appeal to me. And in a way, while it is a costume, it doesn't feel like a costume really at all because it's very real for me.
Well, I mean, you're telling stories. I mean, that's the whole time you're talking. I was like, John Prine, John Prine, John Prine. Like, he just kept coming to mind.
Oh,
And
cool.
the thing about I love about John Prine is like he's so relatable in all the
Yeah,
stories that he's
yeah.
telling. It makes you. I mean, and I think that's the thing about country that you're hitting on too, is like they are telling these complex stories, but they're also incredibly relatable. It's something that we can all attest to. We can all feel
Yeah.
and relate to on a personal level. So I think that also just kind of it's not necessarily a costume because it's who we are.
Yeah. And also, like, it's not like it's inviting. It allows you in. Like, it's accessible. And I think, like, while I love a lot of indie music, I'm like, I mean, I feel like it pushes you out. It's opaque. You're not, you have to be kind of cool in a certain way to get it. And then I think, there are trends now in indie music where it's like so detailed. And I think like through, through the specific, you can access the universal. But sometimes I'm like, that's so specific. I don't know that I actually really get it. I feel like there's something really, really generous about country music.
Well, I mean, I think you, in a sort of roundabout way, I think you kind of addressed that on your song "Lady for Sale," because I mean, it's all about creating art and then not being accepted for your art or having to do other things to get your art out there in a way,
Yeah.
just kind of a dismissal of ourselves.
Absolutely. Yes. I feel very zen. Thank you, Lance.
You know, that song, I feel like, kind of encapsulates the album of wanting to break the mold, yet you're kind of pitching yourself as a commodity, and we're creating art for ourselves, yet seeking approval of others to
Yes.
accept the art that we're making.
Yeah.
And so I think my question is like, when you, because I know you had a bit of a struggle to actually get the album released,
Yeah.
like you had to shop it pretty extensively. But now that you've gotten it out there and you're getting feedback, even the negative feedback, do you have a sense of like gratitude that the art is being accepted and being seen like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's been really nice about the kind of slow burn of acceptance that Lady for Sale has experienced is that I trust that the people that accept it really, really do get it and really do like it and want to actually engage with it instead of it being like a smash that just kind of like everyone likes because other people like it. I mean, that would be great.
I get it.
But also like I really know that the people who like it get it and that feels so special instead of just like, oh, I like one song and everything else you have to say doesn't appeal to me. Like there's something really, really, I feel like holistically embraced by those who like this record, because I know that they had to seek it out. You know, they had to put it on. They had to really, and that makes me happy. But I do like struggle all the time with like the kind of slow burn of an actual career versus this like phenomenal ascent that you read about all of the time. And there's something so exciting to me about like, I've toured more than I ever had over the past year or so, and will continue to throughout the rest of this year. And like seeing how like that like generates like more connection. Like it is like the act of like going out and playing for people is what like brings people together. Mm-hmm. Like you can't like fake yeah. that really. I mean, you can kind of cheat it with TikTok and all this other stuff, but like it takes a while. And like, it, regardless of the high speed world that we live in, like some things still do just take time and effort and like hard work.
I did want to talk about kind of the live show, because I've looked at some of your more recent set lists and it's exclusively Lady for Sale, basically. Like there's no,
yeah, well,
except
yeah.
for one cover for the most part. But yeah, I mean, is there like, why no Heart Head West then?
Honestly, it's like a matter of, well, I, for the most part, I've been opening this year. So I'm playing for people who have never heard my music for the most part. And I want them to experience like the thing that's most current and get on board with that. I will be playing stuff from Hard Head West and from my duets record and from my first EP when I go out on the road later this year when I'm doing headlining shows.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't have that much time on stage, you know, when you're opening. Margot gave me a really generous amount of time with 45 minutes, but typically you're playing half an hour. And with the amount that I talk, that's like, you know, that's like nothing. No, I don't talk that much on stage because I embarrass myself. But yeah, I mean, also, I was not touring with a traditional full band. It's hard out there to tour. And I have been able to kind of cobble together this incredible trio. Well, it's me and two others. So two people are incredible. But it's I've had Josh Kaler, who's an amazing multi-instrumentalist, play steel and guitar and sing. And then Alex Long, who's a great singer-songwriter and drummer and it plays everything, drum, sing, and then he plays all the tracks on the computer. And so it's kind of hard because we don't actually have like a bass player. I say this to, I've been saying this a lot lately. I'm like, I'd be scared if I were a bass player because people are bringing out tracks more and more. But yeah, so it's hard for us to like play things from Hard Head West or from my other records because we're not a full band. So we really just kind of are working with what we got is my extreme answer.
I listened to the Christmas Alone EP.
Oh, fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, is that kind of, I mean, that was, I was shocked to hear all these like pop songs. Like, I mean, you really transformed them more to like a Western kind of sound to them.
Yeah.
I mean, is that kind of how the live versions are going now? Like kind of more?
No, I mean, we're playing, we sound more like the record than we would
okay.
probably if we had like an actual band because we are playing with half the record. We are playing mm-hmm. like, I mean, we have the synth and the bass and then a bunch of like other random sounds because that record has some really weird sounds on it, all in the computer. So, and we're all singing harmonies and stuff, but yeah, it sounds more like the record than anything else, I think. And it's been so fun to do that on stage.
Well, that's cool. Well, as we kind of start to wrap up, I want to talk, we've talked about a lot but about the album, but I want to look at it from a perspective of being a year out.
Yeah.
So celebrating it later this week when this is released, how do you feel about the album's success so far? You kind of answered this earlier, but let's hear a little more.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so proud of Lady for Sale still, which is such an amazing feeling. You know, as a, I'm an actress as well, and I feel like I've done only a handful of things in my career that I'm just like, I love that. And I stand by it and think it's so cool. And Lady for Sale, to me, is that. It's, you know, it didn't do what I exactly wanted it to do or thought it could do because I believe in it so much in terms of like a, you know, astronomical success. But I do feel that it was a successful like representation of my vision and my feelings and this incredible kind of intense moment in my life, which is what so much of that is about. I mean, the record is about basically exploding your life to go and be with someone or do something that's risky. And it's about risk in a lot of ways. And so I feel just really, really grateful to be able to have written about that and to sing about that. I love singing so much. And I also just feel like intense gratitude for all of the artists that have loved it and have brought me out. I mean, First Aid Kit and Margot and Elle King and Courtney Marie Andrews and Jenny Lewis. And like, I've gotten my friend Alexis Taylor from Hot Chip. Like, I've gotten, there have been some artists who I have admired for so long who have just like dug the record and said, like, let's do something together. And that has been incredible. And Third Man has been incredible. Like, I'm so grateful to it. So it didn't do everything I thought maybe it could do, but it did so much more than I ever kind of even dreamed of it being able to do.
Can we, all those artists you just listed, can you get all of them to do a festival together? Like a one day or 2 days?
Oh, that would be so fun. Oh
my gosh, that would be the best. That would be like such a killer lineup.
It would be such a killer lineup. Yeah, I like kick myself for the fact that that's true. And also, like, it's been so fun. I love co-writing, and I've been able to write with some of like the coolest writers in Nashville. I also, one of the coolest things that happened to me from the record, so one of the biggest inspirations for the record was Roseanne Cash, who 7 Year Ache was just like huge for me. And I had the opportunity to do a very, very cool workshop with Roseanne last summer, and she remains such a good friend of mine. And it's just like, I can't believe it. Like, literally, a psychic told me I should listen to 7 Year Ache like 3 years ago, and, or 4 years ago, whatever the hell that was. And I listened to it and I was like, this is the best song ever. This is the best record. Oh my God. And then that same psychic, my friend Perry Lyon, she's incredible. It's actually her birthday today. Shout out to Perry. Was like, I think you need to work with Roseanne Cash. And I was like, okay, dream on, you crazy. And then like a week later, I got an email from Roseanne Cash at like 11 o'clock at night that was like, hey, like, I've been trying to get in touch with you. Like, would you come and do this thing with me in New York? And I was like, yes. So, I mean, not to bury the lead on that, but like, this record has been such an amazing gift to me and gotten me to go so many other places beyond just like having the opportunity to make it and sing it.
Well, I mean, much like that last question, I you've kind of already answered it, but I want to go a little deeper. Like, I know you don't have the foresight to answer this properly, but do you feel like this is an album that will kind of define your career moving forward?
I mean, I don't know. I hope so. I hope that I'm able to be as like innovative and free as I was with this record. And I hope that people continue to discover it, because I feel like when they do, they like it. And if they don't like it, you know, whatevs. whatevs. They're boring. Not my problem.
Moving on to the next project, do you think you will lean more heavily into the 80s pop set, or do you think you'll go back more to the country?
I think it's going to probably, at the moment, it feels like it's going to be more country. But I do love like how much fun the 80s pop stuff has kind of allowed me to have on stage and with myself. And so I feel like there might be some way to continue that marriage.
I've got the idea for you. I've got it. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Triple album. First disc, country. Second disc, 80s. Third disc, blended.
Oh my God. Okay. Yeah. I mean, me and Morgan Wallen releasing the triple albums over here, you know, it's just a normal thing. Everyone's doing it now.
I mean, what better way to blow up the scene with something that nobody else is doing except for Morgan Wallen? I mean, the exact company you want to keep, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. He does have a song though that was like, I think it's the title track. There's some song on there that is like full 80s power rock that he's doing.
See?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, there you go.
There I go. Yeah.
I feel like I should ask another question so we don't end on Morgan Wallen.
Yeah, definitely. Let's go.
Okay, so what are you excited about in the next 3 days? What's something you're excited about?
I feel like I'm doing something really fun. I'm actually going to see Tommy Prine tonight. He's doing a residency here at the Basement. So I'm really excited about that. And then I feel like I am really excited about something this weekend. Now I can't remember. I'm doing something Saturday night. Ah, I'm going to this dinner with like all the most amazing women I know in Nashville on Saturday night. So that's going to be really fun. And I'm excited to just chill and pet my dog because I've been doing a lot of writing this week and I need like a reason to turn off the writing. Otherwise, I could just write forever.
Well, if it keeps you with Willie Nelson puns, I'm fully in favor of you keeping
Thank
to
you.
write. Like,
Okay. Yes. Thank you for the
so get
encouragement. I
back to
appreciate
work so
that.
we can have more Willie
Okay, I will.
puns.
Okay, great, great,
Well,
great.
Lola, thank you so much for your time today. It's
Oh,
been an
thank you for
absolute
asking
pleasure.
me. This has been so fun, and I hope I get to meet you in person in Memphis sometime.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Yesterday's Concert. Thoughts? Similar experiences? Disagree? Let us know on Twitter, Instagram, and even TikTok, or you can email us at info@yesterdaysconcert.com. If you're feeling kind, give us a review on Apple Podcast. Otherwise, until next time, give us a subscribe, check out our website, yesterdaysconcert.com, and most importantly, take care of your shoes.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.